And welcome back to Innovation on Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now in the studio at the University of Sioux Falls is Dr. Thane Munz. He is the Associate Director of the Samford Sports Science Institute. Welcome back, and thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And so it is kickoff of high school football season today, which is why I thought it was a perfect time to talk to you about your concussion study. So let's give a little primer of what we're talking about and then where we're headed.
Sure. We've been conducting research with the South Dakota Junior Football Organizations for 5 years now. We just embarked on our fifth season, and we work with the middle school division, which is the senior division of South Dakota Junior Football. And we've been performing research for the past 4 years measuring their head impact exposure, which is counting the number and the severity of the head impacts that the players experience. And we do that by instrumenting the helmets with sensors that measure those impacts. And we also do preseason concussion testing and postseason testing with those players as well. And what we're trying to do is look for associations between changes in those preseason tests and postseason tests with that impact exposure that the players experience over the course of the season.
And your discovery so far?
Some of our important discoveries are that these middle school players are getting hit just as hard as high school players when we measure the acceleration of the head. So this is really the movement of the head as a result of those collisions and impacts. Those forces are nearly identical in the middle school age population as what's been reported for high school athletes. So that's one of our most remarkable findings. The big difference is in the number of times that middle school players get hit. And that's about half as much over the course of the season as the average high school player. And the reason for that is that the practices and the games at the middle school level are shorter. They don't have as many games and practices typically. So the overall exposure, you can think of it as UV exposure in a similar manner, is less. But again, on a hit-by-hit basis, the impact forces are nearly identical in the middle school players.
So what are you looking for this year in your study?
So we're continuing the research, and what we're able to do in this experimental design is because they are 7th and 8th graders who move on through the same team, we get a cohort of players who start off as 7th graders and then continue the study as 8th graders. So we're starting to accumulate now in our fourth year of doing this particular research where we can break apart our study design by 7th graders and 8th graders and look at some effects of maturation and aging on their impact exposure. And we're also just trying to accumulate more data. That's one of the big gaps in the knowledge in the literature right now, is just having a lot of data in this age group. So every year that we accumulate more data, we'll gather anywhere from 3,500 to 6,000 impacts over the course of the season. That adds to our database and gives us greater statistical power to look at some of these relationships that we're looking for in our design.
And has all of the teams in the area, have they changed the style of their helmet? Have they changed so the impact lessens a little or no?
On an annual basis, South Dakota Junior Football does purchase new helmets just as part of their normal cycle of when the helmets get too old, they bring in new ones. And there have been some technological advances in helmet design recently that may be better for reducing the risk of concussion. And I say maybe because they have been tested in a laboratory, and some of the new tests that have been developed show that some of the newer helmets have design features which lessen those forces that have been related to an increased risk of concussion. But what hasn't been proven is whether that translates to the playing field, whether those slicker helmet designs actually do lead to a reduced number of concussions. So South Dakota Junior Football, like many organizations and high schools, are getting an influx of some of the newer helmets, but it's yet to be determined what those outcomes are going to be. What we know from the research is that a well-fitted helmet is still more important than the brand, the age, and the type of the helmet. If you have a loose helmet or you have a helmet that's too tight that the kid isn't wearing properly, that's going to be more dangerous than having the new state-of-the-art helmet.
So watching a kid running down the field with their hand on their head or hanging on to their helmet probably is a good sign that you need a different one?
Exactly. And you see a lot of kids that will unbuckle their chin strap. And some of that has come down from the NFL where players do it because it's cool. You know, they unsnap their buckles and they like to play kind of loose in that manner, but it's not good for safety. And when young kids, high school kids, and youth players emulate that, it really can put them at risk. So there have been rule changes at the NFL, the high school and collegiate level, where if your helmet falls off, players often have to sit out a play. And that's really to reinforce this necessity for them to have a well-fitted helmet and to keep their chin strap buckled so that that doesn't put them at increased risk.
And do you have sensors on the new helmets to test them in the field?
We've been using the same helmets in our study for these 4 years, okay. And they are a newer model of helmet, or at least at the time that we purchased them, and they're still considered to be one of the top-of-the-line brands of helmets. So we continue to use those, and then we will issue them to the new participants in our study on an annual basis.
Oh, so you don't put a sensor on their helmets, you issue the helmets.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. So when we recruit a team from the South Dakota Junior Football Organization, they will be issued a league helmet, and then if they volunteer to participate in our study, we will give them one of our special helmets that has the instrumentation inside. And they're standard helmets, but it's the sensors inside that make them special.
And do you, you have to have parent involvement in this as well.
Right. And it's, we've had great support everywhere from the league officials and the team coaches and the parents. We couldn't do it without their support, quite frankly, because we can't just walk onto a field and start talking to the kids about being in a study. We have to go through the steps of getting league endorsement, getting the coach to say, yes, you can approach our parents and our team, and then being able to talk to the parents and the players and show them the risks of the rationale for why we're performing this study, the benefits of participation, what we're hoping to gain through the study, and then they have to consent to participate. So we have to go through a variety of steps, and we really need that support because doing this preseason testing and postseason testing takes a considerable amount of time and a busy schedule, and also just being compliant over the course of the season asks a lot of these middle school players. So we really appreciate their support and couldn't do this research without them.
Now, you do the concussion study before and after, and if they have really hard hits, sometimes in the middle as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So what we do is that if they suffer a concussion during the course of the season, we have it built into the protocol that we ask them to come back to our clinic and we repeat those tests. And what's really neat about that is that we have this really comprehensive set of baseline tests that we can bring them back and retest them and measure the severity of their injury and track their recovery. And we've actually published some of these results before with the first concussion that we experienced and had this case study that had never been presented in this manner because mm-hmm. at the middle school level, you generally don't have this extensive amount of baseline data. So we're able to really acutely measure the severity of the injury and again, track that recovery. So that's typically what we'll do during the course of the season. We'll do the pre and post season assessment. Then it's more of a data analysis. So we'll look at the number of impacts and the overall severity of the impacts and look for statistical correlations between those scores and their pre and post test on the mm-hmm. concussion assessments. And in that way, what we're trying to see is, are the players who get hit more or who get harder not doing as well in their tests of memory or balance or reaction time.
Mm-hmm. Can they take this data with them as they move through high school and possibly even the college level? I mean, some of these kids that started this 4 years ago are now playing high school ball, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Some of the kids who participated in our first year are now juniors and seniors in high school. Some of the tests, so we do a computerized test called IMPACT, which is now fairly standard among contact sport athletes for high school level and in some places at the middle school level as well. So those scores could be tracked over the progression of an athlete as they go from middle school to high school and could be useful potentially if they do become injured. But a lot of these things change rather rapidly on a year-to-year basis. So being able to know what someone scored as a 7th or 8th grader may not be terribly valuable when they're an 11th and 12th grader just because of maturational changes. Mm-hmm. They would probably do a lot better on a lot of those tests as a junior in high school than they would have as a 7th grader.
Oh, yeah, they kind of grow, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Oh, sure. Now, you know, we've been following in the news in the last couple of weeks about 9-man football and a lot of these smaller communities, you know, having to cancel their season because they don't have enough players. One of the coaches told us it's not because there aren't a lot of boys that live in the neighborhood. It's just kids are walking away from football.
Yeah, and you see that all over the United States. So in general, the participation rates in football, both at the youth level and the high school level, are dropping. It's not everywhere. There are some pockets, some communities where those numbers have stayed fairly strong. Sioux Falls youth football, for example, the numbers have stayed fairly strong. But nationwide, those trends have dropped. And nobody knows exactly because it hasn't been studied real thoroughly, but the research that is out there does suggest that concern about injuries and brain injuries, concussions in general, are leading to a lot of these decisions of players and parents keeping the kids out of football. And you know, that's a very serious issue when you think about sports participation and weighing the risks and the benefits of the sport. In general, the benefits of participating in sport far outweigh the risks across the board. That's a general statement to make. Now, at the same time, people have to look at an individual sport such as football and say, are the risks associated with playing football too great for the benefits that my child may experience? Would my child be better off playing soccer or playing basketball or playing another sport to get the benefits of the team sport? So it's a complicated issue, and it's a question that parents really need to be able to weigh for themselves, you know, that risk side and the benefit side of the equation. And people are going to interpret that differently. Unfortunately, we don't have real clear evidence at this point to direct parents and guide them in that decision-making process. And that's really my number one goal of what we hope to achieve from this research, is to be able to provide that education and that information to parents so they can make an informed decision and they can look at the risk. Right now, I can't tell a parent of a 12-year-old what the risk of suffering a concussion, much less the risk of suffering long-term brain damage, is by participating in football. I wish I could tell them what that risk is so they could factor that into their decision, but we don't have that information right now. But that's why we're doing this research that we've been conducting over the last 5 years.
This long-term study, yeah. And that you will have. Will you ever have that information, do you think? The actual risk?
Eventually we will, and not just okay. Our group. It'll have to be an effort by many researchers over many years, studying large numbers of athletes. And some of these efforts have already been undertaken at the NCAA level. So there's a very large study that has kicked off with collegiate football players, where they are going to be tracking them for 20 to 30 years, and we're talking about hundreds of athletes. Mm-hmm. Those types of research studies will start to give us these answers about what the long-term risks of football participation on brain health are. But again, it may take 20 to 30 years before we get those answers. Right. So what do you do in the meantime? You use the best available information. So we're trying, that's where our role really comes in, is to provide the best available information for the middle school population. What's the risk on an annual basis? What do we know about just repetitive head impacts on cognitive function and neurological impairments, so that parents have some information at their fingertips to help guide their decisions?
Now, this isn't your only study that you're working on, right?
That's correct.
You're doing others. You want to talk about those?
Yeah. Yeah. We're also looking at other factors of sports injuries. So one of the other major injuries in sports are ACL injuries. Mm-hmm. So ACL injuries, the ACL is a major ligament of your knee. And you hear of high profile players. Adrian Peterson is one of the more recent players. But these injuries occur all too frequent in sports. And it's not just at the professional level. It's at the collegiate and the high school level as well. And girls are often more susceptible to these injuries. Depending on the sport, that rate of injury can be 2 to 8 times greater in female population compared to the male population. What's interesting about this particular injury is that about 70% of the injuries occur in a non-contact mechanism, which means it's a player simply landing, cutting, pivoting. It's not a player running into them or falling into them. It's just the way the player moves. And there may be some improper movement patterns in those mechanics that can be corrected. So what we're trying to do is develop some assessments or some movement screens so that we can identify those injury risks in athletes before they get injured and hopefully intervene and correct them. So we've started a long-term prospective study where we're testing healthy athletes with this video-based movement screen. We're scoring them, and then we're following up so that we can try to identify whether we're identifying those deficient movement patterns so that we can help protect them.
And the screen is, you know, it's computer-based and almost there you can actually see actual...
Exactly.
Speed it up and slow it down, right?
Exactly. We use high-speed video cameras. We have the athletes perform 6 athletic movements. So we're doing this in a very dynamic manner. There are other movement screens that are rather static, just having players or athletes do like a squat maneuver or something that's relatively controlled. What we're doing is having athletes do landing and jumping and cutting maneuvers, the types of things that cause them to become injured. And then we use our high-speed video camera so that we can capture those movements. And then we've got a scoring system, so we look at certain movement characteristics. For example, how stable is the hip musculature or the back, their shock absorption. We're looking at various characteristics of movement that we know are related to an increased risk of injury. And with the high-speed cameras, we can zero down to those frames where they're landing, where they're putting the peak force on their musculature, and we can try to identify whether they're in an optimal movement pattern or whether they're in a deficient movement pattern. And then we can add up those scores and put people in different categories.
And are you focusing on a specific type of athlete, a specific sport?
What we're really looking at is all athletes in all sports, but we do have a particular interest in the young female athletes. I'm talking about the high school female athlete simply because their rate of injury is so much higher. Okay. And there are a lot of questions about why that risk of injury is higher in this population. So in many ways, you know, we're targeting a group that we expect to become injured more often, but they're also the group most at need of intervention, of being able to prevent these injuries from occurring.
Okay. I want to thank you. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Good talking with
you. Thane Muntz is the Associate Director of the Sanford Sports Science Institute. And when we come back, we're going to learn about a new program called Better Choices, Better Health. You're listening to Innovation on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.